The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
So my orthopedic doctor for an MRI, we've almost burned down the house we were staying in two times. It's a true story. Happy to tell you that story at another time. We found a dead body in the water, and by we, I mean my 11-year-old son at the time. That was a real fun week. Trauma and crisis counseling during vacation is real. It's something. In fact, that same week on that trip, we arrive back home, and I wake up the day after we get back from the lake with a severe eye infection. And initially, they think it's pink eye, but they give me the antibiotics for pink eye, and it does not go away. So I go to another doctor, and this doctor believes it was from an insect that flew in my eye while I was riding on a jet ski, or a potential flesh-eating bacteria that is in lakes. So at this point, 7 days in, after multiple trips to three different doctors, four rounds of antibiotics, we finally go to the ER. And now these doctors at the ER are looking at what's going on. They're like, we need to run a CT scan because we think the bacteria potentially has went to your brain. They hook me up to all these IVs, and 7 days later, thanks be to God, the infection goes away. And for some reason, we still love going to the lake. Now, here's why I'm telling you all of that. I don't do well with interruption, like at all. I don't typically react or respond the way that I should. How about you? Do you struggle when things do not go as planned? I struggle. I'm often selfish and often irritated. In fact, this last vacation is the last day before we're coming home. And I'm praising the Lord at this moment because nothing severe has happened on this vacation yet. Like, it's a miracle. And so I'm getting in my truck. I'm going to pick up something to grill for the last evening of our vacation. And I'm about 20 minutes away from the closest grocery store in Seneca. And so I get in the truck, it's just a time to be alone, and I'm beginning to think about this particular section of Mark chapter 5. And what comes to mind as I think about where we are in Mark's gospel, Jesus is being bombarded constantly. Constant interruption everywhere he turns. Jesus, help me, heal me. Why are you doing that, Jesus? Why would you say that? What do you mean by what you're saying? Please, come with me. Come to my house. There's a need here. There's a need in this particular way. And everywhere he goes, Jesus is interrupted. And yet, those interruptions are not keeping Jesus from doing what he has come to do. In fact, those interruptions are actually welcomed opportunities. So here I am, I'm thinking about this passage, and I'm going, man, Jesus has been bombarded left and right. His response is remarkable. And so I pull into a gas station because I need some gas, and I get out, put my debit card into the machine, start pumping my gas, and then a lady next to me says, hey, she's sitting in her car. She says, sir, I don't have any gas or money. Would you help me? She's sitting in her car with no gas. And I just... here's what I thought in that moment. Are you kidding me? Lord, are you trying to test me in this moment? So I put gas in her car, and I got like three or four minutes with her. Put gas in her car, and I try to listen to some of her story, and I'm like, Lord, let me say something, point her to you, give her some sense of encouragement. And I get back into my truck, and here's what the Spirit spoke to me. Terry, what you see as an interruption and what you see as an obstacle, I see as an invitation, I see as an opportunity. And I want you to know this morning, one of the things I am currently continually learning about walking with Jesus is this, that what Jesus is up to, what Jesus wants to do, where Jesus shows up, where Jesus reveals his power and his mercy and his grace, is often in the places that we deem as frustrating and challenging. Where Jesus shows up, where Jesus does some of his most incredible work and reveals some of his most remarkable power, is in the places that we would call unexpected, unwelcome, unwanted. Where Jesus' power and mercy is put on display is often in the places that we go, man, that's difficult, man, that's hopeless. And that reality is all over our text this morning in Mark chapter 5. Verse 21 is where I'm going to begin reading. Mark 5, verse 21, this is God's word to us. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be made well and live." And I love this little verse right here. And Jesus went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. Now, I want to pause here, and I want us just for a few moments to consider the two individuals that we've just read about. And here's what I want us to consider about them, to learn a little bit more about what's going on in this text. What are the apparent obstacles before these two individuals that would keep them from coming to Jesus? What are the apparent obstacles that would keep them from embracing and trusting Jesus? Let's look at Jairus, first of all. He's a synagogue ruler, which means he is a man of power, he is a man of privilege, he is a man of influence. He's not a teacher in the synagogue, but he does possess great authority. He's an overseer. He's the person who makes sure everything stays in order. And here's what I don't want you to miss about Jairus, this man who has come and fallen down at the feet of Jesus. He's overseeing the very group of people who are rising up against Jesus. The people who are opposing Jesus, the people who view Jesus as a threat and who will eventually betray Jesus, are being led by this man. And this man comes and he falls down at the feet of Jesus. Now I want you to think about, what is he risking? What is Jairus risking? He's risking everything. The likelihood of being ridiculed and shunned by the very group of people that he's leading. His name is on the line. His honor is on the line. His dignity, his very livelihood, his very well-being is on the line. Everything around Jairus is stacked against him. The odds are not in his favor that he would come to Jesus. Not to mention, how would Jesus respond to the guy who is in charge of the group that is growing in opposition towards him? Jairus doesn't know how Jesus is going to respond to him. Did you guys just see that? See, interruption. The Lord's testing me this morning while I'm teaching. It's so good. Jesus might not embrace him for all he knows. Not to mention, how will his family treat him if not only his daughter dies, but he also loses everything? His status, his way of life, his dignity, by coming to the guy who may not be able to do anything for his daughter. And we even see it a little bit later on in our text. Jesus is going to say these words. It's profound. It seems insensitive. He's going to look at this group of people and go, your little girl's not dead. She's sleeping. And you know what the response is? It's mockery. These professional mourners, they were often hired by the wealthy to mourn on their behalf as a public display of grief. They mock Jesus. Who does Jesus think he is? What I want you to perceive about Jairus, the synagogue ruler, is that he is a man who has everything to lose. Everything. But he's also a father who's just lost his daughter. And you gotta think, man, he's either at the point of hopelessness or he's quickly approaching it. He's lonely, he's in isolation, the fear is apparent, he is a desperate man. There are obstacles before Jairus. There are things before Jairus that would keep him from coming to Jesus. Now, let's think about this woman for a moment. This woman with an issue of blood. The cards are also stacked against her. We're told for 12 years she suffered terribly. Physician after physician, she spent all of her money, and she's no better. In fact, she's even worse. On top of that, under Old Testament ceremonial law, if you go back to the book of Leviticus, she would have been considered unclean. And I know this is difficult for us to comprehend, but in this cultural moment, if you were considered unclean, it would have been devastating. For 12 years, think about this. She cannot go in the synagogue. She cannot be a part of community. No one can touch her. No one can touch the chair that she would sit in. No one could even touch the hem of the garment that she wore, because anyone touches anything that she touches, they too would be deemed unclean. If this woman is married, it is likely he has left. You want to talk about hopeless? You want to talk about despair? You want to talk about pain and suffering? You want to talk about giving up, throwing in the towel? This woman can relate. She's alone. She's marginalized. She has no one. She has nothing. And here she is in this passage, pushing through the crowds to get to Jesus. She shouldn't be there, and she knows it. Not to mention, how will Jesus respond to her? Like, if she touches Jesus, why would he not condemn her? She's breaking the law. Why would she think that Jesus is going to treat her any differently? Not to mention her own internal wrestle and struggle with the cards that she's been dealt with and the life that she's had to live. She too is alone. She too is isolated. She too is desperate. Now think about this. This influential man, this marginalized woman, have many obstacles before them that would keep them, logically, rationally, keep them from considering coming to and embracing Jesus. What about you? What about me? Can I just pause here for a moment and just maybe help us think about the challenges and the obstacles around us and maybe even within us that are keeping us from truly following after Jesus? Maybe the obstacles in front of us that are hindering us from actually surrendering ourselves to Him. Maybe you're in this room this morning and you are not a follower of Jesus. You've never put your faith and trust in the person and work of Jesus Christ and Jesus Christ alone. What's keeping you from embracing Jesus? Is it His claims? You got to admit, for those of you in the room that do follow Him, He makes some pretty bold claims. Is it the eyewitness accounts to Jesus' life and ministry, even the ones that we have been looking at in Mark's gospel? Like maybe you go, man, those claims and those eyewitness accounts, they're too good to be true. I've heard this one often from people that that are in my circle that don't know Jesus. They'll say something like this: "It's other professing Christians. That's why I'm not a follower of Jesus." It's the hypocrisy, the hatred, the lack of love and compassion that I perceive from those who claim to know and follow Jesus. Maybe it's something like this: it's all the ways someone close to you have misrepresented Jesus to you. And maybe it's the risk of what others will think and what your relationships will be like if you were to embrace faith in Jesus from your coworkers, your friends, your family. It could change the dynamic of all those relationships, couldn't it? And then I think about this, maybe just the jadedness of your own journey, the cards you've been dealt, the circumstances before you, embracing Jesus at this point of your life because of what you've been dealt with and what you have to walk through, it just doesn't seem like it's worth it. What about those of us in the room that would go, I do believe in Jesus? Here's the thing, obstacles don't go away. Maybe you've been following Jesus for some time, and then, you know, you look at the ministry of Jesus as we've been walking through it throughout Mark's gospel, and you find yourself perhaps at a place of indifference towards His claims and presently unmoved as you watch these people risk everything to be in His presence. Maybe you sit here this morning and go, Terry, I believe in Jesus, but if I'm being honest with myself, I'm not living out that belief. I attend corporate worship, but honestly, I attend when it's convenient, and the reason I attend is either out of guilt or duty. I'm not really here to behold the power and the mercy and the grace of Jesus in this corporate gathered time. Maybe you believe in Jesus, but you're not seeking to live that out on your job, amongst your friends, amongst your peers at school, because the risk of status, dignity, and even shame is just too high. I want to say something to us this morning as followers of Jesus that I believe all of us know, but I want to say it anyway. To truly follow Jesus in this cultural moment, to truly embrace Jesus with abandonment of self and status, it is a high risk. Do you know that? I believe you know that. It is costly to follow Jesus. You could lose your job in this cultural moment to truly follow Jesus. You might not get picked in the interview, even though you're more qualified, if you truly follow Jesus in this moment. We might get made fun of. We might get put into a category. Not might. We will, and we have been put into categories. We will continually be pushed towards the margins. What I want you to see is to follow the Jesus we behold in Mark's gospel.
It's not without risk. Maybe not to the degree of Jairus, maybe not to the degree of this woman, but I want you to know, to follow Jesus in this moment, in this culture, it's going to cost. And I believe the invitation to us as we look at this influential man and this marginalized woman is to at least acknowledge, to identify, to bring into the light and wrestle with our own obstacles that are currently keeping us from truly following Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. I think we need to wrestle with our doubts this morning. Not ignore them, not suppress them. I think we need to wrestle with our fear. I think we need to wrestle with our insecurities. Because if we ignore or suppress what we deem as obstacles to following Jesus, what we are doing is actually ignoring and suppressing our faith in Jesus. And you go, well, what does that mean? It means this. As long as we ignore and suppress our doubts, our insecurities, our fears of embracing Jesus, we will settle on embracing something other than Jesus. Namely, ourselves. We'll settle on 101 things. We'll settle on our intellect. We'll settle on our status. We'll settle on the amount of years that we've climbed the ladder. We'll settle on so many things other than Jesus himself. Do you know what this man and woman have in common? They both have no hope apart from Jesus. None. They have no hope, but they'll have to risk everything to embrace that hope. That's the dilemma. They'll have to risk their doubts, their dignity, their fear, their shame. They'll have to risk their own livelihood. And they do. Look at verse 33. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." And while he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is now dead. Why even trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." They're desperate. Can you sense that? They're desperate. And here's the thing about desperation. Desperation is not an obstacle to faith. It can actually open the door to faith. All the obstacles before them actually become a pathway to encountering Jesus. From a cultural perspective, these two people could not be any further apart, and yet when it comes to what truly matters, what they have in common is more than what separates them. You know what they have in common? Need. They're needy. Cannot help themselves. They cannot change their situation. They can't find hope in anyone or anything. Hear me this morning, church. Desperation is not the obstacle we think it is. You and I can live our lives putting all these facades of comfort and security while forgetting that we were created from dust by a sovereign God, and to dust we will return. We can pursue pleasure and meaning and status and comfort all while forgetting that we depend on a sovereign God for the very inhale and exhale of every single breath. We can get caught up in the pursuits of life and forget that we cannot fix the problems of brokenness and sin and injustice. And sure, we can try to numb that, we can try to ignore that, we can try to suppress that, but none of those things lead us closer to Jesus. They only lead us further away. Can I share a personal fear? Like a fear of my own life, and it's one that I hold over us as a church. My fear is that we would live our lives in such a way that we forget just how needy we really are. That we would pursue a life of comfort and pleasure and ease and control, a life with the fewest possible interruptions. And in that pursuit, we grow numb, and in growing numb, we lose our desperation for Jesus. That's my fear. We get so laser focused on the here and now and the present. We get so laser focused on building the dream. We get so laser focused on getting the kids to where they need to be. We get so laser focused on getting to retirement, and we live that life. We run that race, losing the perspective of just how needy we are. This influential man and this marginalized woman see the obstacles in front of them as a doorway to faith. And that's what we see in this passage. That faith can be born in a place of our deepest need. Think about that. Faith can be born in the place of our deepest need. And it is. They come to Jesus. And you go, well, what is faith? Well, faith is not a mood. Faith is not merely an emotion. Faith is not a feeling. Faith is not a vibe. Faith is placing all of our trust outside of ourselves and onto Jesus. Faith is saying, I can't do this. I can't save me. I can't help me. I can't remedy my situation. So I'm going to place all of my trust onto Jesus. I'm going to put my faith there. And you know what? You want to know what the beauty of faith is? The beauty of faith in the person of Jesus Christ, faith overcomes hopelessness. Faith turns shame into acceptance. Faith turns fear into confident expectation. Faith turns rejection into embrace. It turns insecurity into being called a beloved son and daughter. Faith turns hopelessness into unceasing joy. And it turns desperation into joyful dependence. Look at it, verse 37. And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus, he saw a commotion. And people are weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside, and he took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in there where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumi, which means little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. Faith in Jesus is met with unexplainable power and unconditional mercy. Faith in Jesus is met with unexplainable power and unconditional mercy, and it's a power that you and I, we should tremble at, and it's a mercy that we will never be able to get over. I want you to think about what we've seen in the person of Jesus, from the person of Jesus over the last 2 weeks, as we've been walking through, really the last 3 weeks, Mark's gospel. At the conclusion of Mark chapter 4, Jesus, remember, he's on a boat telling his disciples, we're going to the other side, and there's a storm. And what does Jesus do? After he arises from sleeping, he opens his mouth, and the storm ceases. Jesus speaks, and the wind and the waves obey. And you know what the fruit is of his power in that moment? Peace. Jesus opens his mouth, the winds and the waves obey, and peace is the fruit of his power in this moment. Mark chapter 5, we're introduced to a demon-possessed man. Jesus opens his mouth and demons run. And renewal and restoration is the fruit of his power in this moment. We see it in this woman in our text today who has come to Jesus by faith. Jesus opens his mouth and she's healed. Transformation and peace is the fruit of his power in this moment. And now this 12-year-old little girl, Jesus steps into the house and he says this seemingly insensitive question. Why are you weeping? I've learned over the years that it's better to really say nothing at all than to ask really dumb questions, especially in difficult moments. But I don't believe Jesus is being insensitive here. He's being Jesus. Because he possesses the power to open his mouth and to make this little girl breathe again. And he wants these people in this room to know it, to experience it, and to witness it. Power and mercy. Power and mercy. The disciples, they watch the wind and the waves obey Jesus. And what is their response? They're afraid. Who is this man? The people who witnessed the demons fleeing, what? They are afraid. They don't know what to do with that. Many of them are like, get Jesus away. I don't know what to do with him. The woman who touches Jesus in this passage, she knows what's happened to her, and yet she is still afraid. This little girl's family, seeing her rise from the dead, they're filled with amazement. They witness his power and they respond accordingly. They tremble. Who is this man? Who are we that we can be in his presence? Do you know what the beauty of being aware of our need for Jesus is? The beauty is we get to witness his power at work in our own lives and around us. And that should not only humble us, we should tremble at his power. And I wonder in our life, we see the eyewitness account of Mark's gospel, what Jesus is doing in the lives of these people. When's the last time we have been awed by his power? Like, I want the power of God to show up in my life. Who wants that? I want that at my home. I want to be able to sit around my kitchen table and open up this book and pray to the God that we are praying to this morning. And I want to claim the promises of God over my home and over my family. And I want to see the power of God. I want to see the power of God here. And here's the thing, I think it's not because he's not showing us his power. I just don't think we're looking for it. More often than not, we've become so familiar with him that we're not looking in the right places. We're not paying attention. I stood around that circle this morning at about 9:25 with about 25 volunteers, 20 to 25 volunteers, and listened to two high school students articulate the power of God at work in their life this past week. What a beautiful thing. The power of the gospel through the Spirit of God at work in 15-year-old boys, 14 and 15-year-old boys. And you know what? I don't think we are amazed by that. And we should be. We should tremble. And we should be humbled that we get to witness what God is up to in and through the lives of people. And it's in that power, that awareness of what God is up to, that He reveals His mercy, because the power of God and the mercy of God always go hand in hand. They're never separate. His power is always met with His unfailing mercy. Think about this. Jairus comes to Jesus by faith, and not only does Jairus witness His power, he's met with mercy. Hey, Jesus, I think my daughter's dead. I want you to come with me. And verse 24 tells us Jesus goes with Jairus. At that point, we have no prospect of what Jesus is going to do, but we do know this. Jesus goes with Jairus. And I think that's a powerful image. Jesus embraces him. He walks with him. And Jesus speaks to Jairus' fear. Jairus is grieving over his daughter. And Jesus goes with him to that place. Listen to me this morning, church. Jesus goes with you to the places not only of your greatest fears, but also your deepest sorrows. And he meets you there. He meets you there. His mercy will meet you. The woman isn't condemned. She isn't rebuked. She isn't judged. She receives the full mercy of God. And she has something spoken over her that she probably hasn't believed in decades, if ever. Daughter. Daughter. I see you. I embrace you. I love you. If you're sitting here this morning and you feel unlovely and unacceptable, I want you to know that the mercy of Jesus meets you in those places. And here's what he calls you: beloved son, beloved daughter. What a powerful thing that God would meet you there and reveal the love of the Father to you. And then the little girl, she's raised from the dead, which is incredibly profound. Not breathing, not living, now living and breathing. Walking around, if you will, if you look at the text. But you know what else is incredibly profound in this story? This little girl's hungry, and Jesus is keenly aware of that. Keenly aware. Family's frantic, panicking, all over the place, fear, trembling. And Jesus' eyes is locked in on this little 12-year-old girl who obviously needs something to eat. You want to know how powerful Jesus is? He can open his mouth and the winds and waves will obey him. He can open his mouth and the demons will run. He can open his mouth and heal the sickness. He can open his mouth and raise the dead. But you want to know how good he is? He cares about every single detail of your life, even when you're hungry. Nothing's too trivial for Jesus. Jesus doesn't merely raise the dead. He is also gentle and specific to meet you right where your need is present. The power of Jesus and the mercy of Jesus go together. And faith tells us, faith in Jesus is being humbled by His power and being changed forever by His mercy. I want to invite our team back up.
as we consider where does this passage meet us this morning? And I want you to think about this. Obstacles. I want you to think about the obstacles around you and perhaps within you that are keeping you from truly following Jesus. Believer, non-believer. What are they? We all have them. There's not a person in this room who's not wrestling in some capacity. Doubts, fears, insecurities, family heritage, experiences, circumstances, health, relationships, status. We've all got them. Obstacles, obstacles, obstacles abound. There's something in your pathway, my pathway, that could keep me, likely is keeping me, keeping you from truly coming and falling at the feet of Jesus and embracing Him for who He is and what He desires to do in our life. And what I want you to consider this morning is, would you ask the Spirit to bring those obstacles to mind? Even right now, I believe the Spirit is speaking. What are those obstacles? And then as you identify those obstacles, here's the words I want you to hear from Jesus in this text, because I think this is the whole point of this passage. Jesus is saying this to your obstacles and your fears and your insecurities and your doubts. Trust me. Trust me. Will you trust me? All of those obstacles you are identifying are actually doorways to encountering my power and my mercy and my grace. We can trust Him. We can trust Him with our hunger. We can trust Him with our doubts. We can trust Him with our devastations. So take the risk, step over the hurdle, and come to Jesus. Let's pray. Father, we love You. And this morning we ask that from Your word and from the eyewitness accounts of this influential man and this marginalized woman and even his 12-year-old little girl, God, that You would reveal something to our hearts about Your power. Your power that's still at work. And Your mercy. Your mercy that wants to leave us forever changed. And the acknowledgement as we think about the characters in this story, this real life account of the people who met You and embraced You and chose to step over the hurdles and the obstacles to come to You and embrace You by faith, they're before us as well. I think for a lot of us, one of those obstacles perhaps is we become so familiar with You that unfortunately we're now bored. And maybe that familiar perspective has come to a place that we've no longer relied on the power of the Spirit within us to walk with You, to stay in step with You. Maybe it's circumstance, and maybe it is health, maybe it's I look across this room, the loss of loved ones. That I think could easily be a hurdle, an obstacle. And so, Spirit of God, I pray right now, even as we're gonna sing, that You, God, You would meet us and You would speak to us and You would bring to the forefront of our minds and hearts what is that thing? What are those things? That we're not willing to let go of or step over. Embrace You for who You are. Bring it to mind
and give us courage to take the step of faith. Would you stand with me as we continue to worship?
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.